Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day, great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Tuesday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We're with you till 10 a.m. this morning. Got a lot of stuff to get to today, man. A lot of stuff. Sitting on a football team here that's 4-1. The only 4-1 team in the AFC right now. There's a 5-0 team ahead of the Texans, and they are called the Kansas City Chiefs. The Saints did not do us that solid we were hoping for last night, Seth. No help.
No help from the
Saints.
I like, though, that... It would feel wrong right now if the Texans had the best record in the AFC, just because it still feels like there's so much untapped potential. And yet, you watch the Chiefs, and man, the Chiefs have a lot of similarities to the Texans this year. You look at quarterbacks who are playing well, but it doesn't necessarily play out in the statistics. They're saddled with running backs who aren't ideal, and yet there they are. They're 5-0, and they just keep winning ugly.
Yeah.
I don't want to draw too many similarities between the Chiefs and the Texans because I feel the Texans haven't earned that, and yet there's a lot. If you're looking at the positive side of the coin. That, man, the Texans are close. If they could clean a few things up, it could feel like an emphatic 4-1 right now.
Yeah, like I think the world knows that Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback on the planet, and I think the world knows that C.J. Stroud is ascending to that level, right? And,
yeah.
And yet, both of those guys make winning-style plays when they need to be made, but neither of them have been piling up the numbers or anything like that so far this year. Both of these teams, and the Chiefs have been doing it, obviously, to your point, much longer than the Texans. But the calling card for this Chiefs team the last couple years has been Mahomes when you got to have it, and the defense for all 60 minutes with Steve Spagnuolo. And I think that's where I think equating it a little bit is that while we all get swept up and you got to have a franchise quarterback and, oh, we got to go trade for a marquee wide receiver, that's happening all over the league, and you do need good quarterback play. Defense has been the common thread with the Kansas City Chiefs the last couple years, and that's where I feel like the Texans, I think defense has been much more the calling card this year to get to 4-1 than the explosive offense we were all expecting.
Yeah, and the defense, it's just like the team in general. I think with the defense, there's almost like a hesitancy to acknowledge the good parts of it. I mean, they're fourth in defensive DVOA right now, defensive efficiency.
Yeah,
but it doesn't always really feel like that. Partly because they get bludgeoned in the run game at times, but they do come up with big plays in the run game too.
Yeah.
So there's times where they're getting driven on, but then you get a big tackle for a loss, and all of a sudden it's third and long, and the drive is killed. And they've done a good job with that. I think the two things with this, if you're going to compare the Texans and the Chiefs, and why. It doesn't quite feel like they're as good as their record is. You look at a lack of, with the Texans, a real explosive passing attack. And then defensively, they're not taking the ball away at a breakneck pace. So right now, the Texans are -3 in turnover differential. The Chiefs are -4. And the kinds of things that really help you pile on, like let's be real. Most of the time when there's a blowout win or a convincing win, turnovers play a big role in it.
For sure.
And as of yet, the Texans really haven't flipped that ratio to where you can really just start kicking people into the earth.
No, and they needed the turnovers last season, too. Like, they played in all those close games last year, and they led the league in turnover differential. That was a big reason why a lot of people thought the Texans would backslide a little bit this year, is that turnover differential, there tends to be a little bit of randomness baked into it, you know, and they thought, well, you're not going to lead the league again just because that's really hard to do. Yeah, the Texans. We didn't really touch on that yesterday. They beat the Bills, and they were -2 in turnovers in beating the Bills.
Yeah. It was an ugly win.
Yeah.
I got to start coming up with a better vocabulary to describe ugly wins. Kind of like the Inuit have like 27 different words for snow. Around here, we need to have 27 different phrases for an ugly win.
Yeah.
Yes.
Text in. Help us out.
Get out the old thesaurus later
today. The old thesaurus. Yep. My favorite dinosaur, the thesaurus. So the Chiefs win last night 26-13 over the New Orleans Saints. I I was in and out of that game. Monday seems to be the night that I kind of pass out in my chair because Sunday's such a long day. So
they're all big talk about how you don't need that much sleep. It catches up to you. You're like a damn toddler, is what you are. Just without the tantrums. I don't need sleep. I don't need sleep.
Right. Amy puts me to bed. I was in and out of that game a little bit. When I did wake up, Derek Carr was doing the same thing he was doing when I fell asleep, which was gets under pressure and then just throws the ball straight up in the air.
He just goes for it, doesn't he?
Just throws it straight up in the air and hopes his wide receiver is going to make a play on it.
He goes, in his mind, he's not like the kid who can't shoot yelling Kobe as he takes a shot. He's like, in his mind, he's like, Favre!
That's what it's like.
Because he'll throw some Favre-type interceptions, but he's not quite, he doesn't have quite the Favre ability to make up for it on the other side.
No.
Favre!
Jamarcus! So the Chiefs win again. I think the other thing too, as long as we're on this Chiefs Texans comparison thing too, is what I noticed last night is a lot of the times when the Chiefs get fancy, it works.
Yeah.
It works.
Yes. You and I had the same thought, which is because the same thing I'm seeing. Oh, Travis, if Bobby Slowick had Dalton Schultz line up at quarterback and run the zone read, I'd be like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Enough with the cuteness, Bobby.
Right.
But, Travis Kelce lines up at quarterback, runs their little option game they have there. And yeah.
Can you imagine the reaction of us in the press box if Dalton Schultz was lined up in shotgun? But Andy Reid does it, and it's like, oh, this is going to be good. And it was. Read option zone read with Xavier Worthy getting the ball.
That's another one. I think I'm a little bit hypocritical with Bobby Slowick because the fact of the matter is a lot of the trickery has worked with Bobby Slowick. The Stephon Diggs play, a couple of Stephon Diggs as the primary ball handler has worked out a few times.
It has, you're right. Yeah.
He had the pass in Minnesota, which actually ended up being a good play.
Yep.
And then they built off of that into him running for a touchdown 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you're right. Diggs, Tank not as much. I think it feels like Texans opponents are ready for Tank to get a couple touches in the run game every week.
Well, yeah, but the thing about that is defenses, and this is where people get mad at me online, Sean, because there's a part of me where...
Because of all your politics? Yeah.
I'll defend Bobby Slowick in terms of really tying the run game and the pass game together. Mm-hmm. I don't like saying use the run to set up the pass because that's not the way it works anymore.
Right.
But just having concepts that offset each other. And the thing about Tank Dell on the jet sweeps and him with all that stuff is that it does affect the defense's coverages. It does allow you to diagnose certain things. It makes the defense because they're very aware that Tank Dell might be a runner on any given play.
Yeah.
Because they can hand the ball off to him, whatever. But it also just opens up things in the passing game.
Yeah.
So it helps TJ diagnose. I mean, I saw Keekly talking about this on Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. He was talking about Luke Keekly, not the other Keeklys, motion is motion, whatever. When these guys are running across the formation at 4.340 speed, that puts stress on teams, especially when he gets behind the center. He might be a ball carrier or he might be switching coverage strengths and all that. So, yeah, there's nothing more frustrating than a jet sweep that doesn't work out because you can see it coming.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it never goes for 3 yards. It either goes for 19 yards or it goes for -6 yards. There's no in between.
So that part, there's something about Diggs, Dell, when he's in motion. It's scary. I get that feeling. I get that feeling in my gut when I put myself in defenders' places. There's that whenever Tank Dell is in motion or somebody that fast is just full speed and I'm watching to see how they're adjusting on the secondary. The other is just an option football with the defensive ends.
Yeah.
When you're playing it clean.
That's tough.
It's hard, man.
That's tough.
It's a bind.
Text message, flawed victory, someone's saying, instead of ugly win, a flawed victory.
Flawed victory. Yeah, let's put that in the book of, I got to create a Google Doc
the book
here.
Of ugly win synonyms. Yeah. Someone said fugly.
Well, that's how about a butterface? It's a butterface.
It's a butterface.
That's what it is. It's a butterface.
It's a butterface. We're just calling it a butterface.
Put a bag over that win's head. Yes.
We need somebody to go to a D'Amico press conference and ask about a butterface. So I know that game against the Bills was a butterface.
Hey, D'Amico, did you feel like putting a bag over that thing before you
cut out some eyes? Yeah. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. I think the biggest story for the Texans right now is Nico Collins' hamstring injury. Here was the very first question at the press conference yesterday was about Nico Collins for D'Amico Ryans.
Yeah, Nico, he's in good spirits. Of course, with the hamstring, it takes a couple weeks for a hamstring, so we'll evaluate that, you know, on a week-to-week basis to see when we can get him back.
How do you replace what he's brought to you all this season?
Yeah, missing Nico would be very difficult. Like, Nico's been the best receiver in the NFL this year, so do you replace him? No. Everybody just steps up, and whatever role you're asked to do, you just step up and play your role the proper way. Nobody has to go out and be Nico, right? There's one Nico. He's done a great job of that. Now whoever is next, when your number is called, make the plays that you're supposed to make. He's attacking his rehab the right way. Our staff will help him get back right when that right time is.
Okay, so purely functionally as far as what this means for the Texans, I'm hearing that this is going to be a multi-week thing when I hear that. Right?
You know,
is that what you're reading into it?
Yeah, and honestly, I'll credit Michael Moss, you know, my retired attorney that emails me a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, he's very prolific. I have time in my day scheduled to read his emails. But one of the very first points he made after the game and is in my post-game email to me was that I don't like hearing that a hamstring is day-to-day. Because a hamstring, like, it's not. You can't, because you have to wait until it's multiple days after it starts feeling good
it's
before
gotta
you
be,
can feel good about
it's
it.
It's got to be 100% healed.
Yeah, right? So credit to Michael Moss for the fact that D'Amico came out and instead of day-to-day said week-to-week.
Yeah.
I know it always feels like Houston is the city plagued with hamstring issues across all sports, but this is just what it's like in sports. Hamstrings are so dang finicky, and when it's your favorite athlete or one of the, if it's Chris Paul or whomever else, it's really, really frustrating because you just never know from week to week.
You know, I'll be honest, I hadn't even thought of that Houston hamstring angle with this Nico thing. It's been a while since we've had one, I think. It's affected us.
Well, congratulations, because it comes in waves, Sean.
I know. They come in threes.
Watch yourself. Head on a swivel out there today, Sean. I don't want you making any sudden movements in a crosswalk or something.
You take that four-mile walk. You best be careful, Sean Pendergast.
Kids, just wait for the day when you're in your 50s and you have to make a business decision when you realize you're in the middle of a crosswalk and the light's about to change. You're like, well,
here I come, Kirby! Kirby!
I don't like the looks of this traffic, but I don't know if I can make that 10-yard dash without injury.
True. God, it's so true. It's sad. All right.
Yeah, walk around like I'm an actuary.
Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, we got some leftovers from the Bills game. Seth and I only get a two-hour bite at the apple on Monday, so we still got some leftovers from the Bills game.
Let's gnaw this apple down, baby.
Indeed, down to its core. One thing I was dead wrong about with this game that I was very strong opinion on.
Yeah, we're going to crush you for this.
Dead wrong about. I'm going to crush myself on this. We'll get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, the one thing I was dead wrong about when it came to the Bills and the Texans, I said it multiple times last week, said it in my podcast, the Utopia Football Podcast. I thought that the winner of this game, especially given the fact, Seth, that it was the only game all weekend that involved two teams that were above 500, like 2-3-1 teams. These are two of the at the very least better, if not two of the best teams in the AFC. I said that whoever wins this game will be the talk of that. They will be at the bottom of the screen in a positive. The winner would be at the bottom of the screen on First Take and Get Up and all those shows. And the topic would be, does fill in the name of team that won this game, are they the challenger to the Chiefs in the AFC? And I was right about one thing. The Texans-Bills game was at the bottom of the screen yesterday, but it was the loser of the game that was the big topic. The biggest topic yesterday was Sean McDermott and the way he handled the end of that game. Huge topic.
Right. Yeah, and I thought too, you know, in thinking about that last week, I thought if the Bills lose this game, I think it's going to end up being more about maybe the Bills aren't as good as we thought they were.
They for real.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at what the Texans were able to do to Josh Allen, and I felt this in myself. I felt I didn't give the Texans defense enough credit, really, for making Josh Allen have that performance, partly because I'm looking at his weaponry without Khalil Shakir, and you can see, all right, he just doesn't have the horses, and the Texans did a really good job of exposing that, but that's a couple weeks in a row now where teams are looking at the Bills and saying, well, gosh, they got throttled by the Ravens. We're not quite sure what the Texans are, but they lost to the Texans. And it was more of a diminishment of the Bills than it was an elevation of the Texans in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah. J.J. Watt tweeted this while the game was going on Sunday. Baffling game management decisions by the Bills at the end of this game. He tweeted that at 3:12 p.m., so right as that game is winding down. J.J. Watt tweeted that. Mike Greenberg tweets yesterday, there will be losses in the NFL this year. There will be worse losses in the NFL this year than the one the Bills just took, but there may not be a dumber one than the Bills just took.
Sean McDermott admitted it was a mistake immediately. Well, he said he'd take the blame for it after the game.
I thought Mike Sando, and I don't want to dive too nerdy deep at 6:23 in the morning and the mechanics at the end of the game. I'll just say this. The fact that the Texans had all three timeouts left at that point was a real weapon for the Texans.
Yeah.
Because even if the Bills just tried to empty the Texans' timeout satchel, if they don't get a first down there, the Texans are still getting the ball back at midfield with a chance to win that game.
Right. Yeah, that's the... I didn't think it was nearly... as like overly aggressive or anything that anybody else have been, accusing McDermott of. Plus, I mean, at the end of the day, all right, wait a second. Is your quarterback the MVP leader or not?
Right.
Like, exactly. Okay. Is Sean McDermott, if all of a sudden all the same people that are saying Josh Allen's the best quarterback in the league this year are now saying that coach trusted his quarterback too much.
Yeah.
No, that was dumb.
No, that's a good argument. My counter argument would be, well, he was 9 for 27 up to that point. He wasn't having the greatest day, and the Texans were getting after
him. How small is your faith, Sean Pendergast?
How small
is your faith?
I acknowledge the validity of the Josh Allen MVP argument. So I don't think D'Amico was perfect at the end of that game. Like, D'Amico, if the Texans don't win that game, D'Amico probably gets a lot of heat, or maybe Bobby Slowick with approval from D'Amico at continuing to throw the ball on the second-to-last possession, where way more bad stuff can happen than you just running it into the middle of the line and letting Kaimi try a 59-yarder at that point, right? Because you had three timeouts. You're working the clock at that point. You could have run it into the line, taken the clock down, and kicked a 59-yarder instead of having CJ drop back, where you can get sacked, you can throw an interception, or you can have what happened. He gets an intentional grounding penalty.
The one part, I've been very critical of them for passing in that moment. The one thing that I keep reminding myself is I can't sit here and expect Kaimi Fairbairn to hit a 59-yarder, which also then puts you in bad field position, or there's more of a – the longer the field goal, the more of a chance for a block and a return all of that. Are we getting a little too comfortable thinking that Kaimi can just, as long as it's 65 yards
yes!
or less, we're cool?
The answer's yes. Yes. Okay. I fully expected him to make the 59-yarder that he made at the end of the game, and that's not a healthy prism to be looking at that game through. You know, like, hey, he'll make the 59-yarder. It's no big deal. Here was D'Amico yesterday. He was asked about it. Your decision to continue to pass on that second-to-last possession, which led to intentional grounding penalty, which led to a punt by Tommy Townsend instead of a field goal attempt by Kaimi Fairbairn.
Yeah, with that, you know, we felt like they would zero pressure us. So, you know, of course, we would like to say run the ball, but not trying to lose yards there. Felt like with the pass, we can get a quick pass there to the side, quick pass to Dalton there, but miscommunication on the route between Tank, Dalton, CJ, miscommunication at a critical moment in the game, not clean enough, not good enough for us offensively. Like, in that moment, like, we have to be able to execute much better, and that wasn't good enough.
Okay, now that's a fair point that I had not thought of. The fact that, I mean, I'm treating this running game like it's some vaunted running game that's going to automatically get you 3 or 4 yards. Because they were probably going to zero blitz us, and that would result in a loss of 4 yards running Dare up the middle.
Listen, we're having a hard enough time running against light boxes, much less a zero blitz. So the other part of it, too, is that it wasn't like they were trying to take a shot downfield.
No.
It was, you know, the short passing game is an extension of the run game. And in that regard, I think the execution of it and the fact that there was a miscommunication makes me more understanding of it.
Yeah.
I think this is I'm guilty of this. We as football fans are very, very guilty of this. Like, come on, guys. All you got to do to combat the blitz is run more screens, throw a screen. My God, can we not be more aggressive? My God, what the hell is going
here? It's true.
Or just run it there. Why aren't you running there?
Yeah, someone said, thanks, Sean, but it was going to be closer than 59 at that time. It would have been about a 57-yarder. They were at the 39-yard line of Buffalo.
I'm assuming if they ran, they would have got a 2-yard loss.
I hadn't even thought about that until D'Amico said it there. I'm like, yeah, that is true. They could have gotten stuffed in the backfield. Dario Gumbawale has the best job in the NFL. No other job can you carry the ball 15 times for 30 yards and be lauded like you're Eric Dickerson after the game.
I was trying to figure that out. I think CJ and D'Amico and the other people that were complimenting not just Dare as a receiver, but Dare the running back. Because CJ said it, and I think D'Amico did too. Man, they would say, you know, catching the ball, running the ball. Yeah. I think they're just being polite there.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, 2 yards per carry is not an awesome rushing performance. I would say a couple maybe more critical or key successful runs in the second half.
Yeah.
So as you think about them trying to close the game out, it started to look better, but still not great.
He was good, other than the drop that he had, which was really crucial because CJ fumbled on the next play. But the 6 catches he had for 57 yards were massive in this game.
Okay,
those were big catches.
And that's one, too, where, again, everything offsetting each other. You know, Dario Gumbawale, if he's never in there to run the ball, they're going to account for him in the passing game. You know, and on those... The one of the passes he had, one of the receptions he had in the first half was beautiful, just in that it's one of the best ways to combat what you see with all these simulated blitzes. Everybody's all lined up at the line of scrimmage. Some of them are blitzing, some of them aren't. But on this play, Dare's in the backfield. The linebacker's up at the line. Whichever linebacker was responsible for him in coverage got hung up in the line, and Dare ends up wide open, you know, because they had a mismatch numbers-wise. And, like, those things, if you just send Dare out there to be, you know, you're nothing but a receiving back, it's not going to work nearly as well as when they're actually running him, too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I was trying to multitask here, Sean. Sorry
right.
about the stuttering there.
No worries.
I went all Max Headroom on you.
Good. Hey, kids, Max Headroom was this computer-generated...
Really annoying TV show in the 80s.
Super annoying, yeah.
And yeah, I just watched it all the time. trying to figure out what the hell was... You know, when you're that age and you're watching Max Headroom, I remember being an age where I still wasn't sure if it was an actual human or not. Like, is that an actor or is it, you know, I couldn't be bothered to read the TV guide to find out about it. Like, I was like, wait, is that a computer simulation
or
is that an actual?
The TV guide was this printed. We're having a lot of hey kids moments this morning. Here was D'Amico yesterday on the importance of having all three of his timeouts left at the end of the game.
For us, you want to save those times. Timeouts are valuable, especially in the second half, so you want to save them as much as you can. So just to make sure we're running a clean operation offensively where we don't have to burn any timeouts. So the guys did a good job operating there so we could be in position to have three timeouts, you know, under our discretion there at the end of the game, and it helped us out there tremendously.
I think D'Amico, where, you know, we can nitpick at some of the game management things over the course of the season, maybe. I mean, I think D'Amico, by and large, has been an excellent game manager since he got here as a head coach last year. Excellent. The one thing he has given a master class in the last 2 weeks is the importance of timeouts at the end of a game. When your team's burning a timeout because you can't get situated in the middle of the third quarter, what I've learned in the last couple weeks is I should be way angrier about this, because in the Jaguars game, it was so important that D'Amico forced the Jags to deplete their timeouts on that final drive, right? I mean, that ensured that the Texans, at worst case, were going to overtime in that game, and the Jags were not going to be getting the ball back with any significant opportunity to win that game. And then yesterday, I tell you, having all three of those timeouts still left, with the Bills having the football at their own 3-yard line, that impacted the thinking of Sean McDermott. I guarantee you it did, because he's...
Yeah.
Because Sean McDermott was kind of trapped in a corner. Yeah, throwing three incomplete passes and leaving the Texans with any timeouts is suboptimal. But again, to your point, you got Josh Allen back there. The alternative is you run the ball into the line three times, you empty their timeouts, and the Texans still get the ball back at the 50.
I'm not trying to make a C.J. Stroud, Pat Mahomes comparison, but I think it is when you respect the quarterback on the other side of the field, it's that you don't want to give him any kind of field position.
Right.
You want to make it as hard as possible for him to come back and have any kind of a drive. So, I will staunchly, you know what, I'm going to call a Buffalo radio station today.
Do it.
And, yeah,
as
I'm going to defend Payne, Sean McDermott.
As Seth Payne or as, like, Bob on a mobile or something?
No,
like
this is my method acting role. I'm going to pretend I'm actually Sean McDermott's cousin, and I'm going to be like a burner account almost.
That's just exactly
defending
what I was thinking.
Sean. You know what? Hey, put that down in the book of things that we'll never get to. Me calling other cities' radio stations pretending to be or delivering like the most possibly unpopular take that they want to hear, like defending the most hated person in that city.
Now you may need a burner phone for that because your caller ID might show up. I mean, it's, you know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Based on the 19 calls a day I get that look like they're coming from my area code, I'm guessing that there's an app I can use for that.
That's true. That's true.
The 19 calls a day I get that are actually computers.
Say
or
spam risk below them.
Somebody who's definitely sitting in some sweatshop in a foreign country.
What did you make of the cold handshake between Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs? Did you see that after the game?
I saw various Bills fans saying this is proof positive that Stephon Diggs is a horrible person, just a notch below Hitler. Yeah, I thought it looked like the classic, like, hey, what's up? Maybe two guys that don't love each other, but whatever. Yeah.
The screen grab that's making the rounds is the best.
The one that it's at his eyes, it's just got like a scowl on his face. Yeah, the screen grab is so evil, man.
I know.
It's one notch below Hitler is what it is, Sean.
But it's so funny. It's so funny because it is. I mean, because Diggs already has kind of that built-in scowl on his face.
He's got a little of the resting Brandon Cooks face.
Yeah. And the way the picture is, because Josh Allen is super, I'll retweet this for those who haven't seen it. Josh Allen's super close to the camera, and Diggs' eye just fits in perfectly between Allen's chin and his shoulder pad. It just looks so funny. I choose to believe there's still drama.
Do you walk around society fearing like the chance that somebody's taking a, like catching you with a still shot where you might just be checking out the prices at the fish market or something, but it looks like you're staring at an old lady's butt? Like, I worry about that way too much. This constant surveillance I'm under.
To answer your question, no, I don't, and that's why I'm going to get caught in a situation like that at some point. I have zero awareness.
There's always the worst are basketball games because somebody's sitting like courtside. And you can actually tell that they're watching some action on the court, but because like Brad Pitt's looking sideways, it looks like he's checking out the Laker girl's butt or something.
Yeah.
They do it with women at basketball games a lot too. God help you if you're a woman that shows any kind of emotion at all on your face. It turns into like, look at her totally like lusting over this player right next to her man.
Or a woman eating a hot dog at a game.
Right.
That's a death blow right there. That was one of Amy's really good friends is used to date Hunter Pence, and they would go to Astros games all the time, and Hunter would warn them before the games, don't eat any hot dogs at the games.
Because of him.
At some point, there'd be a camera shot of them at the game. Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. Still a reaction Tuesday here because we're still basking in the afterglow of the Texans' win over the Bills. We've got a whole lot more to get to on the show, including headlines. We got Monday Night Football last night. Your Don nominated for a little hardware, and we've got updates on all the injuries for the Texans as well. That is coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, today's headlines, and let's start with injury updates for the Houston Texans. Here's D'Amico Ryans. The most important injury right now for the Texans is Nico Collins' hamstring injury. Here's D'Amico Ryans yesterday with the update on Nico Collins.
Yeah, Nico, he's in good spirits. Of course, with the hamstring, it takes a couple weeks for a hamstring, so we'll evaluate that, you know, on a week-to-week basis to see when we can get him back.
All right, so it's That sounds to me like he's definitely missing the New England game this weekend. And there, it sounds to me like there's a good chance that Green Bay is in jeopardy as well in Week 7.
You know? Week to week.
Yeah.
Week to week.
And he literally said a couple of weeks, right? He said multiple weeks in that answer right there.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel, Seth?
It makes me feel, the first person I saw comment on this after the news came out, it kind of surprised me, and then I was surprised that I was surprised. He said, well, yeah, Nico gets injured a lot. Yeah. And my knee-jerk reaction, my defensiveness almost, was like, no, those problems are all in the past. Mm-hmm. Okay, Seth, point to me the season in which he didn't have injury issues. Hey, man, shut up. Shut up, man.
Stop being a jerk, dude.
You know what you're talking about, man. you missed time last year due to injury. So these are not issues that are completely behind him. And then immediately I thought of like, oh, yeah, that contract. We got to evaluate whether it was – is it the extreme bargain that it's looking like if he's not available? I'm trying not to think that way right now because this is – it's a hamstring. It's week to week, so that means it's not something that's torn off the bone or anything. But, yeah, it's a reminder that, man, Nico has struggled with injuries in his career.
Yeah, I during the bargaining phase of the Nico injury and handling it over the weekend on Sunday night, my whole thing was just don't go to IR. If you go to IR, then that's a serious hamstring injury because you're missing at least four games. And if it's a hamstring where they're saying we're for sure not going to have our best non-CJ Stroud offensive player out there, then it's probably a pretty severe hamstring as opposed to kind of playing in the middle and hoping he comes back in two or three weeks. You know what I mean?
I think, okay, if I were going to go to the old, maybe this could be addition by subtraction. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go there because, look, Nico, even as we talk about, like, hey, all these defenses are taking the top off the offense, and that's why passing is down. But your receiver is leading the league in receiving yards. What are you talking about?
Still. Yeah. After missing most of that game.
I mean, you hear it over and over again. And sometimes cliches are cliches because they're true. Sometimes when you lose your best player, your best receiver, your quarterback is forced to distribute the ball more. And we've seen CJ get better at going to the check down and going to the tight ends more quickly in these past few weeks. Yeah. I think if Nico has to miss a game or two, then, man, maybe they really just start spreading the ball out and using the whole field, and it ends up being a good thing in the long term.
Yep. Here's the update on Christian Harris, who has, to this point, including training camp, participated in basically 30 minutes of one practice. He's on injured reserve. He's eligible to come back. Will he be back this week, D'Amico?
Not yet. We're still waiting on Christian. Christian is improving. He's doing well. We actually had Christian down on the sideline yesterday. It was just encouraging to see him down there, see his support, his energy that he brings to our team. And whenever we can get Christian back, it'll be beneficial for everyone. I'm excited about his growth and his development. I'm still very encouraged by that. And Christian he'll pick up right where he left.
This is the issue I have. The one part of that little statement that freaked me out was he may as well have been describing Dylan Horton like while he was in cancer treatment when he said, he was on the sideline. It was great for everybody to see him. Like, oh, that sounds like he just got out of the hospital, you know?
I'm on the same page with you. The weirdest thing about this Christian Harris injury is just the complete absence of Christian Harris around the team. Like, remember that?
Yeah.
Remember at training camp, there were plenty of injured guys at training camp. Laremy Tunsil was being handled with kid gloves. Joe Mixon missed a lot of practice. There were several others. Those are probably the two biggest names. They were all working out on the field next to the team. Christian Harris was never out there other than that one practice, I think. He was never out there. And for D'Amico to point out, like, he was on the sideline. That was really good to see. It's a calf injury. Like, it's been really strange. It's just been weird.
When I had a medical oddity myself with the Texans, I had a situation where I had an ACL, and I had the ACL in like September, so I should have been fine to come back the next year.
Yeah.
And then I had all kinds of complications with it. I ended up having 5 surgeries because of that one ACL.
Wow.
But the media didn't really catch wind of it until maybe after my 4th or 5th surgery. And it was one of those things where all of a sudden, okay, this guy gets an ACL in September. And they, the media finds out in June or so that, you know, by the way, Seth Payne might not be available for to start in September. He might not be ready to go at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
And like it was times were different back then, and there wasn't just as much pressure, you know, especially in the off season by so many outlets. But I like it's things like that happen. I don't know. You just have. And there was never a press release or anything about it. But it, at some point, you got to come right out and say, all right, yeah, look, by the way, Christian Harris done got messed up in July.
Yeah.
And this is what's going on. I'm starting to wonder what the hell. Yeah, like, it's really, really weird that we've gotten basically zero actual updates on exactly why this has taken so long.
Yeah, it's been very, very strange, no doubt. Last update, Joe Mixon. Will Joe Mixon be back anytime soon?
For Joe and his injury, we'll still evaluate that week to week. We don't know as of right now. I can't give you that answer, but we'll see how Joe improves over the week. He's definitely been improving. Week to week, he's been improving. He's doing a great job attacking his rehab, so we'll see where he is as the week goes on.
Yeah, this will be interesting. This is one of those games the Texans will never publicly downgrade this game coming up because you got the Packers in a home game against the Colts coming up after that. The reality is this is not a good football team that they're going to be playing on Sunday, and I wonder how much that factors in to guys that are on the fence. You know, Mixon would be a guy who's... Mixon practiced a week and a half ago. You know, like, he actually practiced, but he hasn't played since then.
Yeah, the high ankle sprains are just finicky. And I think the thing about a high ankle sprain, this is just from my personal experience because I've had a few of them, and then just, you know, based on timelines of other people, I don't worry as much about when he comes back. Is he going to be touch and go? It's, you can re-aggravate high ankle sprains and it's painful as hell, but usually you can manage your way through it. But it's taken him a while, and maybe it's this week, maybe it's the next week. I'm not as concerned about him for the rest of the season, though.
They're still winning football games. They're 4-1. So,
they're the worst injuries, man, because it should be. It's a sprained ankle. It sucks when you have a high ankle sprain. You feel like, I always felt soft. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're looking at me like, oh, it's just an ankle sprain. And I've been out for 7 weeks.
Kind of a critical joint, though, I would say, to be a football player.
It's tough. In my mind, I was always like, well, it's not the pain. Because you can fight through, you can play through all kinds of awful, awful pain. Mm-hmm. But your leg just doesn't work right. You're just, you're walking on a peg leg.
Yep.
The thing won't hold up.
Long John Silver at defensive tackle. Yordan Alvarez is one of 10 nominees for the Hank Aaron Award in the American League. It is an award that accounts for offensive statistics, accomplishments, and performances. So it's for the best offensive player in each league. Shohei Ohtani is going to win it in a landslide in the National League. I would say of the nominees that I'm most concerned about beating Yordan Alvarez, I would probably be Aaron Judge. Is my guess is going to win that award for the American League. But Yordan is one of 10 nominees for the Hank Aaron Award. And I would take Yordan over any of these hitters. I think Yordan is the best hitter in baseball.
Who right now is the favorite? Like, who's a potential Hall of Fame candidate behind Altuve on the Astros right now?
That's a good question. Well, I mean, who's obviously, Verlander.
I guess I don't think, is that bad? I'm like... In my mind, I was like, you know, I mean, no. like a guy who's just,
not
you think
a hired
of as an
gun.
Astro.
Yeah, not a hired gun.
I know, I'm such a jerk. How spoiled am I as an
spoiled.
I mean, like, you know, a real Astro.
Guy who came up through the system.
You mean the guy that's attached to the World Series and everything? No, a real Astro.
I think it's, like, if I had to bet, like, if I had to go, okay, you can't pick Altuve, you can't pick Verlander. Yeah. Who would you have to bet? Who would you bet? On a bet that's going to take 15 years to pay off.
Yeah.
I would bet Yordan Alvarez. Easily, I bet Yordan. Like, you look at all the... Now, he needs to stay healthy, you know, and continually here. He's going to be an Astro for a long time. We know that. And he is the one guy who, when he does so many things statistically, where the only faces on the screen are Yordan Alvarez, Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio, Babe Ruth... Albert Pujols and Yordan Alvarez. You know, like, it's he is the one first to this many home runs. It's Yordan Alvarez, Hank Aaron, blah 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 blah. It'd be Yordan for me.
So I guess what I'm thinking is, like, I want to say Like, I think of Yordan as a homegrown Astro, even though he wasn't technically, and yet that's how he came up. Yeah. You know, like, yeah, that's where, whoever puts you over, yeah, and whoever you play, where it's an easy decision. Oh, yeah, of course, he goes into the Hall of Fame as an Astro.
Yeah, he was in the system. He was in the minor league system at some point, even though they traded for him. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Monday Night Football last night, Chiefs beat the Saints 26-13. All right, up next, we just mentioned the Patriots. Early storylines for the Patriots, and the Patriots have some drama swirling around the team right now on the field and off the field. Yeah, we'll get to all that coming up next. Early Patriots storylines.